Welcome to another edition of Through Science to Health with yours truly, Chris Bricker, and co-host Lynn Sorensen, RN retired. She's a member of the Virus Watch team here at KPTZ. We're on alternate Fridays during the noon hour, and we bring you discussion and updates surrounding the pandemic and review some of the current insights and the journey of discovery surrounding COVID-19. And to help us with all of that, joining us today is Dr. Joe Mattern, Jefferson Healthcare's Chief Medical Officer. And Dr. Mattern is charged with overseeing the logistics of distributing the COVID vaccines for Jefferson Healthcare. Welcome, Dr. Joe Mattern.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back again.
And welcome, Lynn, my co-host, as usual.
As usual, here I am.
Maybe a little bit of an overview, Joe. What the projections are for the county for vaccine distribution.
The best thing to do is bring folks up to speed of where we're at. And I think that ties in well with kind of where we're going with regard to projections. And we're still at a point where the number of folks who want the vaccine is more than the vaccine we are supplied. But since we spoke last, things are really headed in a more positive direction. It's great news for us. And so I think a few weeks back, if it felt like the line had paused and was not moving forward, it was because that was very much the case. There was a lack of vaccine supply across the state, particularly for new first-time doses. We were fortunate, knock on wood, that we have not had trouble securing second doses for folks that we had already immunized. So we were at least in the good place where we were still completing vaccination series for some patients, even when we couldn't get new doses available. But over the last couple of weeks, we've been very pleased to get allocated what will amount to a little over 1,100 doses a week for the last 2 weeks dedicated to new vaccinations. And so many of your listeners might be aware that based on our system, we have an email notification system is a significant part of our workflow about how we notify people that their time to schedule an appointment is now. People have made use of our website. People who have email and are able to access the internet, and that is still the best way to sign up for your vaccine is to get yourself on our list. We work that list primarily in age order. So older patients come first, but we are beginning to schedule patients as young as 70. So we're really getting to the kids now in our community, relatively. So the line is moving, I think is really the key thing. We will find out tomorrow, so the day after this recording, whether we will be allocated another 1,000 plus new doses for the following week. And on top of that, I know local pharmacies have been working to get allocations. We expect that even when they have not been getting shipments, that should start to improve as well. And so what I would anticipate you're going to see over the next few weeks is our hope is to be in a steady trot of receiving about 1,100 plus new doses a week. And on top of that, we'll be getting into more second doses. And so we'll be getting 1,100 second doses. We have the ability to do over 2,000 plus doses a week, which is the state expectation is that you use up pretty much what you get in a week, both first and second doses. It is important to note that our allocation of second doses is dependent on what we get for first doses. There's no wiggle room. We don't get extra. I know one of the reasons that the line has moved a little quicker is that some community members have gone outside the community to find vaccines. The state does not encourage that, but we understand that it happens. And we're certainly happy if people get vaccinated a bit sooner, but we also can't solve the dilemma of the second dose for that population. When we schedule someone for the first dose, we schedule the second dose and our allotment will pretty much match first and second doses. So, and that's Pfizer vaccine. Some people are getting their first dose of a Moderna vaccine and then hoping that we can get Moderna for them. But generally, we've not been supplied with Moderna except for a small number of doses in one situation. So I think if there's listeners out there who went out of county and got a dose at a pharmacy somewhere and they're hoping that the second dose can be at Jefferson, the way that the state allocation is not working is that we don't anticipate that we will be able to do that for them. So they will have to make plans to return to where they got their initial dose because the state allocation plan is really anticipating that people will, it will be their vaccine home, first and second doses. But we are making progress. You know, one of the things that the state we're hearing is committed to is paying attention to the demographics in the community. And that's important for us because I think if you just looked at the state, whether looking at the Seattle Times or some people will go to the Department of Health website and look at the vaccination map and we're this nice dark blue color about how well we're doing. We need the state allocation to pay attention to our demographics because we don't want them to say, hey, look, Jefferson, you know, County, they have like 25% of their residents have vaccines. They don't need anymore. We have a significant portion of our population is one of the oldest counties in the state that's over 65 and is in the initial tier. So we don't want them to start to hold vaccine away from us just thinking, well, you're probably finished. If they look at our demographics, they'll understand that we've made great progress. As of probably this recording, we're probably upward of 9,000 doses, probably over about 5,000. I think we're around 5,000 that are first doses for us as an estimate, just through us. And that's not including the pharmacies and anyone else. So, but when you realize that over 65 population in Jefferson County is, you're talking 11, 12,000 people. We're not done. Our work is not done. So we still need the vaccine to keep flowing. Then we're going to be into essential workers and people with other medical conditions. And so we have definitely a population that the vaccine needs to keep coming to. And if they're paying attention to the age groups, that's good for us. That's good news for Jefferson County.
Joe, do you have any coordination of data there between the pharmacies and you and just what's actually going out the door?
Formally, no. Collaborative phone calls and sharing of information and practice and what are you doing? Absolutely. Two of our pharmacies have big corporate families that they belong to, and that will help them with their allocation because they will likely get allocated from the federal program moving forward. So they won't be as tapped into the state, but the folks at Tri-Area Pharmacy will be like us in coordinating with the state, and we stay in close contact to see numbers and help one another out as far as referrals and things of that sort when people are looking for vaccine. And then the fifth player in this is the health department and emergency management are standing by. They're waiting for the supply to open up to the point where they can make a big ask to do a mass vaccination event. And so think of this as a, you know, kind of steady flow with the hospital and the pharmacies, and then maybe get a big, pun intended, shot in the arm to, you know, jump us further. So maybe, you know, one weekend where you see an additional couple thousand doses get done at an event. And so they're even practicing already for their event. So they're doing really good work. And that's the kind of thing that will just speed this whole process along to getting the folks who want the vaccine done in a more timely manner.
Just a question, Joe. I am going to be helping out the Department of Emergency Management. Retired nurse. And because of that, I was able to get my first Pfizer shot at Jefferson Healthcare through that connection. And I got to say, everything went so well. I had it last Friday. So organized. It was just amazing. And I have to say kudos to the staff that keep that going.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a true collaborative project. A lot of people make that hum. We realize it's not something that's going away anytime soon. So we've hired extra staff to staff it. And we've got a volunteer pool as well that we're making use of. And I think people feel really good about the work and, you know, feel like they're part of the solution to the pandemic. And community appreciation has been great. So I think while I know that everyone was hoping that they could get the vaccine, you know, kind of beginning of January. It hasn't worked out that way, but I think once they get in line and they get the experience is a good one and organized. And I think also the nice thing too is because we schedule your first and second doses, you're familiar with the process. It will feel comfortable coming back. And it also, I think, is important to just kind of know that you've got that holding spot of to finish the series. So yeah, it's a system that's working quite well. Others in the state have kind of looked at the system too. And I think that they find that they can learn from it. The good news is you're in your dry car, got the radio, bring a book for the 15 to 30 minute observation afterwards, and just know that you're going to sit tight. But for a lot of folks, they're kind of, you know, there and gone in an hour. But occasionally we get some backups.
Joe, any feedback about reactions to the first or second shot?
First vaccine dose, usually some soreness. Some people will feel a little bit kind of under the weather, kind of mildly. What was really kind of apparent is that it's the second dose is the one that creates more of an immune response. And so we do tell people to anticipate that if you're going to feel under the weather, And it's typically kind of, you know, a little, you know, fever, achy, rarely that someone runs a high fever, but occasionally we have had some rashes for folks. It kind of reminds me of someone who's as a family doctor, I lost count of how many kids with fever and rash I've seen through my career, but it reminds me a little bit of those kind of viral rashes that we've seen a few assortment of things. These things have all been really benign. We've had a few folks we've had to watch closer, more worried about the more concerning allergic reactions. But we've had no serious harms from the vaccine, and in the what we're learning, and as we look at populations, you know, bigger, you know, large numbers of folks now, and a couple months out from vaccinations, and really the safety profile looks quite good. One thing I will tell folks is don't pre-treat. Some people are saying, oh, I'll just take some ibuprofen and some Tylenol before I get the vaccine. We actually don't want you to do that. There's some evidence that those medicines can get in the way of your response. So we'd rather you get that second dose and feel a little bit under the weather. And if you really are having a lot of pain and you really kind of feel not well, you can think about taking some medicine. For folks who take something like ibuprofen or anti-inflammatories on a regular basis, I would recommend if they take that daily, they may want to ask their doctor or their healthcare provider whether it's worth maybe holding off on that the day beforehand. I've gotten that question. Sometimes it's okay to stop for a day beforehand just to make sure that their immune system gets the best response. But that's a conversation with their provider who knows their health. So, but it's okay. You know, I think the thing is that you don't have to be afraid of the second dose. I think it's just good to plan on chicken soup and a day of reading a book and, you know, watching a movie and staying under the covers if you need to. It's just part of your body saying that it saw the vaccine and it's doing its job.
I have a question, Joe. I know you said earlier that the Jefferson Healthcare notifies people through email. What about those that don't have internet or a device to get that message on?
Yeah, great question. I think one of the challenges, and I think we might have talked about it on one of the previous shows, is we have a population that needs the vaccine that doesn't necessarily have access to technology or doesn't navigate technology as well. So for the folks who are really used to using their email and using the internet and have Wi-Fi and internet access, the system is quite good. For people, you know, particularly who require help from someone else, people of more advanced age, early on, we knew that we were going to need I would say we have a schedule fast and a schedule slow. And the schedule slow lane is something we've been actually, I think, fine tuning this whole way, because we do need people who need to make a phone call and have someone help them through the scheduling process. And that's been trickier with the wait list, because our wait list has been dependent on email for letting people know when their time has come. So we've actually done some work now, and we have a non-email wait list that people can get on. And one of the things that we're working on this week is we're training our own staff. So if we have a patient in the clinics who says, I'd like to get on the wait list, but I don't use email, the staff can get them on a separate callback list. And we're also working with emergency management. So early on, I think people were aware that they needed help with scheduling. They could call emergency management. That number is still available. That line is being staffed Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. The phone number is 360-344-9791. By calling that number, you can get a volunteer who can talk to you and get folks signed up. And if they don't have email, they'll be able to put folks on this callback list so that we'll be able to know that they want the vaccine. And when the time comes up because of their age band, we'll be able to get it to them.
We're getting plenty of information from the news outlets about the variants of the virus and all the rest of that, and the reaction to the vaccines and all the rest of that. But one of the things that I know you're passionate about is equitable distribution and making sure that people don't fall through the cracks. What about people that maybe are shut-ins or homeless or disabled or just flat out maybe don't even have a phone?
Yeah.
How does this happen?
One of the things that we're doing is, you know, we're very fortunate because we actually have this huge database from our electronic medical record of, you know, who's in our community. And one of the things that we're doing is we're taking the opportunity to cross-check folks. So when we receive vaccine supply, I kind of mentioned sort of schedule fast, schedule slow. We have some spots that we don't get filled up through the email system right away. And this is the one where we're reaching out. So we have the folks on the callback list who maybe don't have the technology, but we're also using this sort of separate lane to make sure people don't get left behind. So what we can do is we can run a report and say, you know, we haven't heard from this 85-year-old patient of Dr. Mattern's who certainly would qualify for the vaccine, and we'll reach out to them. And it's very time and labor intensive, but it's really important. It's a way that you kind of make sure that folks aren't falling through the cracks. And so we can see who among this population are particularly vulnerable. So we are able to see, because it's part of our electronic medical record, we can identify in particular really higher risk individuals who we haven't heard from. We've worked with our home health population also to identify people on their service that we have to reach out to and work a little bit harder to connect with the vaccine. So we're using these things. The other piece I would say that we're not immune to in Jefferson County is inequity based on race and ethnicity. We were able to actually look at numbers in our county, and individuals who identify as Black, Hispanic, Native American, they are not getting the vaccine at the same rate in our initial distribution. And so we are reaching out and making sure that they are also not left behind, because we need to do that work. We can't assume that, well, you're in a rural county, that's an urban county issue. So we have to also ask the question. In some cases, we have patients who English is not their first language. So for people who have English as a second language, what we're doing so far is, are we actually reaching that population to know? So going one step further besides simply running the report, what are other ways for them to know, or maybe they need education about the vaccine and what we're doing? So we've begun some work working with community leaders and organizations. An example of that would be a community organization called Jasira, who works with members of the community, particularly who are Spanish speaking. You know, you got to learn. And one of the things we learned was that with that population, text messaging and phone calls work well. Internet buttons and emails do not. So if we can coordinate and work with them to get the message out about how to schedule and how to, you know, connect them with us, we're doing some work. We have a language line that we use for translation, but we can make some modifications to that line where it's easier to access at the time of scheduling and have that more available to people. So the first time that they call here, there's more assistance with the first phone call rather than us having to call them back and do a lot more arrangement. So, and we're working to make sure that language line capabilities are available even in the vaccine line. So if people need translation at the time of their vaccine administration, that we've got resources to do that. So, you know, our program is for Jefferson County residents, but it's for all Jefferson County residents, you know, so that takes a little more work in some cases. And so that's part of what we think is our job to do, because I think we're equipped to do that in a way that sometimes a Safeway pharmacy or a small family pharmacy is not equipped to do.
Getting that volunteer team together, especially for the mass vaccinations in the future, and then even people knocking on doors, right?
One of the things that will be happening later this week will be the Johnson & Johnson vaccine will likely get their approval. It's a one-dose vaccine, but also doesn't require the same kind of delicate handling that certainly the Pfizer does. The Moderna is a little more forgiving. When you have a vaccine that holds up under a better variety of conditions, you can lower the barrier to access, and that does mean things like more flexibility in sites that you can pick to do a vaccine clinic, or even like doing things like sending a vaccine out with a home health nurse, or sending, doing a mobile clinic. So options will begin to increase, and we'll see that across the state, and we'll apply what makes sense for our region.
I see Lynn Sorensen over there rolling up her sleeves and getting ready to go. There.
Yeah, she's game.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Joe Mattern, thanks for joining us today, Chief Medical Officer for Jefferson Healthcare. I want to thank you for coming to join us again. We will talk to you to get an update a little bit later on. You've just listened to another edition of Through Science to Health with yours truly, Chris Bricker, and co-host Lynn Sorensen, public health advocate, RN retired, and soon to be active with the vaccination process.
Go get them.